Hey folks, welcome back to the DC3Cast. I am Brian. With me, as always, are Vince and Zach. Tonight we're going to talk about the DC Comics released on April 24th, 2019, starting with a book that I got a text from Vince. I'm going to ask him to read verbatim in a minute on Saturday, I believe it was, and that is Heroes in Crisis, number 8, written by Thomas King, illustrated by Mitch Gerrits, and who was the other person who was on this book?
Zach's buddy, Travis Moore.
Travis Moore, that's who it is, yes.
Why is he my buddy?
You like his art a lot.
Do I?
Yeah, you did. When he was the Nightwing guy, you were like, that's some pretty art.
Okay, I think you're right. That's true. That did happen.
Hey, I know you better than you.
Yes, you do. You do.
All right, Vince, so would you regale our listeners with the text you sent us?
I just said, Heroes in Crisis 8 is the dumbest issue of a comic I have ever read. Is that the one you wanted?
That is the one I wanted, yes. Well, I hated this issue. I don't know if it's the dumbest issue of a comic I've ever read, so I want you to explain to our listeners why you think this is truly the dumbest comic you've ever read.
Well, look, like when I say that, it's not like I'm going back into the, you know, literally thousands of comics I've ever read.
Humble
and
brag.
Making sure that this truly is the dumbest one, you know? But like in that moment, it sure felt like the dumbest one. I almost want to give this one the page by page treatment.
We can do that.
Can we do that?
Yeah.
Cue it up.
But if you're asking me why I think this is the dumbest issue of a comic I've ever read, and if you want me to explain it in a very concise way, I guess the way I would do that is because this issue is literally like 20 pages of Wally West explaining the entire mechanism and true culprit behind the murders in Heroes in Crisis in a very matter of fact and for once linear fashion, when one of the essential elements of said story is time travel, the very thing that could have fixed all of this. But instead what resulted was like one of the most convoluted single issues of a comic I've probably ever read. That juxtaposition is what makes it one of the dumbest things I've ever read. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Zach, before we go page by page, what did you think of this issue?
I thought it was bad. Thought it was real bad.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say.
No, you're not wrong.
I think I said it was the worst case scenario for this book.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with that. To me, this did everything I didn't want this book to do, and didn't even take advantage of the shitty thing about a time travel story is that you can be as terrible as you want to be, and then you can undo it with the wave of a hand. And I guess they could still do that here, but it seems like they did all the stuff that you would normally see in a time travel story, but without the redemptive hand waving away of that stuff. Like, this is basically Back to the Future 2 if it stays in the, like, evil Biff storyline. It just seems to me like there's no reason to make it this dark and this unsatisfying. I don't know. We'll get to it. So, Vince, why don't you be the captain of this page-by-page read through here?
All right. So we open on Wally West, kind of in profile, saying, "My name is Wally West. I'm the fastest man alive," because, of course, he says that, and this is my confession.
And then on the next page, he says, "Just when I thought I said all I can say."
Keep going.
My chick on the side said she got one on the way.
Keep going.
These are my confessions.
This is better than anything that's in the issue.
Man, I'm throwed, and I don't know what to do.
Are you doing this all off the dome, Zach?
No, I looked it up for the bit.
For the bit. You got to commit, man.
I was going to say, thank you for your commitment.
Commit to the bit.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so then on the next page, we see Narc and what's the devil kids?
Hellboy.
Kid Devil.
No, that's not it either, but
Red Devil.
It is Kid Devil. And Kid Devil.
Oh, Kid Devil. Okay. All right.
That's what I said, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then Roy. And it's, you know, we learn later that this is Wally. This has been Wally, like, revisiting all of the people who have been at Sanctuary stories in order to feel their pain, right? Mm-hmm. And that continues on the next page. And all the while, he's giving this really convoluted narration about, like, how he's feeling and how his mind is betraying him. He's thinking that everything is his fault, or that, like, he's alone, but he shouldn't feel alone. Thing that maybe he's the only one who feels like this and nobody else does. And that's the thing that drives him to go back and look at all of the other people who have been at Sanctuary stories.
You're
right?
Jumping so far ahead right now, though. If we're going page by page, that doesn't come to, like, halfway through the book.
Well, we don't need to literally go page by page, but, like...
But I do want to say something about this, okay?
Uh-huh.
And I think I might have said this on a previous show, that I think that the one thing that King has done in this series thus far that I haven't completely hated is the idea that for all these other heroes, they have similar stories that put them in Sanctuary. And Wally's is different. That Wally's remembering the past is, like, the worst thing that could happen to him. And I think that that's actually a not terrible take on the character. I think that that could be a very interesting Wally West story. And when this issue started, I thought, oh, okay, maybe King is going back to that idea a little bit. But he almost completely dismisses that idea early on. And kind of says, like, oh no, like, I realized everybody feels this way. And so the one interesting thing King had done to Wally's character, he also undoes very quickly here.
Yeah.
And that really bothers me as well.
Well, and I think what it is it's in service of trying to, by him doing that, it's King ostensibly trying to be sensitive to the fact that people with behavioral health problems sometimes do feel like that, like, they're alone and there's something wrong with them and nobody else feels this way, or you know,
yes,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the problem is once again, and this is probably the most glaring issue that proves this to be true. If this book is about how superheroes deal with their problems or deal with violence, it's not really about that at all. And so what begins as, like, a sensitive Wally maybe realizing that he's not actually alone ends up completely sidestepping the conclusion you might come to, or any sense that anybody at Sanctuary is grappling with that in a healthy way. Even before all the weirdness went down, you know?
Yeah.
There's no sense that any of these people are actually getting what they need, or that anybody is getting better, or that anybody is actually confronting these issues in the way that, again, King pitched this book like a year ago, you know? And this issue's the worst culprit of that, because you've got Wally directly telling us how he felt about this the whole way through. And by the end of it, he's not, like, learned anything. nobody's like, no, he's not really grappling with the mental health aspect of everything.
Right.
It's all about the murders, right?
It is about the murders, and we'll get into the time travel stuff, but, well, the time travel stuff is not used to fix the murders, or...
No.
I really don't understand what the time travel stuff is used for.
We'll get to that later in the issue, because I have a lot of thoughts on the time travel stuff, too. But I did want to say, also, I feel like if the point of this book, this particular issue, is to get to the heart of that Wally, like Vince said, like so many people in lots of situations, but specifically people with, you know, specific types of mental health disorders might feel alone at different points. But then he comes to the realization that he's not alone, and that's a good thing. But after he comes to that realization, he still kills everybody. Like,
and tries to cover it up.
Yes, exactly. It just seems to me like if that's the lesson he was supposed to learn, well, then he done fucked it up. Like, there is no logic to that whatsoever. He comes out of Sanctuary feeling this overwhelming empathy for the people around him, and when they try and be empathetic to him, he can't allow that. And it's not played for he's self-defeating and therefore can't allow it. It's just that he physically is overwhelmed. I don't know. It just makes no sense to me. But let's keep...
When we get to that part, I want to talk a little bit more about that, because there's a comparison I can make that is probably that feels like what King is going for. And again, I think he whiffs pretty hard on it. But we'll talk about that in a bit. So the thing is that I don't want to read all of this. I'm not just going to read all of this narration that we're seeing on the page, but basically we're seeing page after page of the different interview subjects that we've seen at Sanctuary kind of having their traumatic moments. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that ends with an image of Wally and Linda and the kids and him saying, "I was alone." So now, like, then it shows Wally racing through, you know, the Speed Force, basically, putting the pieces back together from all of the data on the Sanctuary subjects so that he can watch all of the interviews, right?
Yes.
So basically all these interviews that we've seen issue after issue, it's essentially Wally watching them. We're watching them through Wally's eyes.
Yes, and we should pause here for a second and say that in story, Wally basically says that the Trinity designed Sanctuary so that none of its data could be reconstituted. That it was broken into a billion pieces to protect the innocent or whatever. And but he puts it back together. Yeah. And while I understand the idea of the Trinity not wanting this information to get out, I feel like just the fact that they're videotaping it at all feels a little weird. Obviously, we were supposed to be seeing these confession videos, but did we ever think they were actually videos?
I'm not sure.
Doesn't the whole idea that they're filming it just seem a little bit counterintuitive to what this is supposed to be?
Yeah, maybe. I mean,
I don't know. It just felt to me like it was an extra step that I didn't think needed to be there. I don't know. Everything about this issue felt weird to me.
I think the bigger contrivance is Wally going through all that data and wanting to put it back together. Like, to me, I don't think there's good enough justification for Wally to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, he lived through a bunch of this stuff with, like, all these other Titans characters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't buy that. Like, that is the biggest contrivance of all this to me. that he even does that in the first place.
It also, I mean, here I'm going to harp on superhero pseudoscience again, but it also just doesn't make any sense. It's like there is all of this data that has been fragmented and is existing in the ether, and then he's somehow, because he's fast, assembles it into a watchable video.
Well, you can do a lot with very fast electricity, Zach.
I guess so. I don't know.
I think it would be better if we saw him like running around with like a thumb drive in his hand, just like physically collecting these pieces or something. But
well, he's literally running through the series of tubes, which is the internet.
That is true. Well, yes,
but it's even like that isn't like even the most egregious like speed thing in this issue, where he's like it's explaining that he is moving Harley and Booster places so fast that they don't know that they're.
Yeah,
it's like. It's like they were leaving the room, but I moved them so fast, and then they walked back into the room, and they didn't even know it.
And I'm a huge criminal now. I am
the creepiest guy in the history of comics.
I'm making Dr. Light look like a normal individual. No, that's terrible.
We'll get to the Infinite Crisis connections later.
You mean or Identity Infinite, Crisis?
I mean Identity Crisis, sorry.
Oh, you mean the comic that looks fucking genius compared to
that's the one.
So then because Wally's messing around with all these videos, something in the Sanctuary computer system or robotic system or something sets an alarm off because they know that something's happening that it shouldn't be. And so Wally runs outside. He's the first one to run outside. And he's talking about how he's processing all the pain that he just witnessed by watching these videos. And he's kind of having like a panic attack or whatever. And it's manifesting itself as electricity around him letting
the speed force storm, as they call it in Flash comics.
Exactly. And when everybody runs out with the alarm and sees him and approaches him and tries to help him or whatever, he can't handle it, unleashes it, ends up killing everybody, right?
Yes.
Which, how am I supposed to believe that this has never happened in the, you know what I mean? Like is it really a thing that, I mean, tell me, because maybe I'm forgetting something from Wally's history, but is it really that he has to concentrate on holding the Speed Force back at all moments this?
I don't think so. Can I do my own comic book pseudoscience investigation here?
Yes.
So we're supposed to believe that Wally is fast enough to put together all this information, but that he's not, but that his feelings are still at normal speed. Like, if he's having trouble coping with this, you would think because he does everything faster than everybody else that he would freak out for half a second and then be in control. Right.
Or that he would go somewhere so far away from everybody else and like destroy a mountain or something.
Yes, exactly. Or just, you know, like run away.
But here's the thing that I want to bring up right now, and it's a sensitive subject, and I don't want to piss anybody off, and I'm going to be very like careful with how I say this, but I really think that this
hold on a second. Is this too fucked up? Is it too raw?
It's too raw.
Okay. Just making sure. Just clarifying there, okay?
Yeah, it is. Say it.
Yeah.
You got to post it.
You got to podcast it.
No.
Very well.
I think what Tom King is going for, because this is Tom King's MO, and this is something that he's talked about in the run-up to this series, but he's really trying to get PTSD across on the page, much like that of an ex-military, a veteran type person would experience, right? Mm-hmm. I really have to believe that on some level that's what he's going for here. And only the superhero version of that. And we know that there have been instances where, you know, veterans affected by post-traumatic stress have hurt strangers, loved ones around them.
Sure.
Because of just not being able to handle the anguish and the mental difficulties that, you know, their PTSD have caused in them, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what he's trying to do here, but
see, I took it, go ahead.
Not
dissimilar to that. I took it as like a friendly fire situation where through like, you know, the trauma that he's experienced before, he has hurt his brothers in arms, you know, not dissimilar, just kind of adding to that, you know, anyway, go ahead.
Well, because specifically he says, you know, you're making sure the world's most dangerous weapon stays put, that it stays inside you every day, every second. And after that, seeing all the hurt for the first time that day, that second, and then he unleashes. And that's, I've read similar anecdotes from people who suffer from PTSD, who are ex-military, and they say things like, you know, I see these images every day, or I see, you know, mm-hmm. or a couple times a week. I essentially relive these moments, right?
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it came across pretty clear, and knowing Tom King's background, you know, and I'm going to try to be as sensitive as I can. But what I want to say about it, as far as criticism is concerned, is that I just don't really think that works in this shared superhero universe. You know what I mean? I think there are stories you can tell with superheroes using that subject matter. But I think in the DC universe, making this a quote-unquote DC universe-wide event, the idea of superhero PTSD causing a bunch of murders like this is not... I mean, think about what these heroes are put... the ringer that they're put through constantly, every week, every issue, every... You know what I mean? It really comes off as like... super unrealistic that this superhero... I shouldn't even say that, right? How can I say super unrealistic about a fucking comic book? But you know what I mean? Like what it's a contrivance that feels so egregious because of how serious the subject matter is trying to be. You know, like, it fails. Go ahead, Zach.
Well, I was going to say liking it to something that I've been seeing on Twitter a lot lately for some reason, but the way that Marvel handled 9/11.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, excellent, you know, comparison there.
Yes,
a very
that's a perfect...
serious thing,
yep.
That is just contrived to fit within,
yeah,
this universe where it doesn't make sense.
Dr. Doom is crying about the World Trade Center being blown up when in reality he'd be thinking like, why didn't I think of hijacking
exactly.
a plane? And I actually would have been
a literal terrorist. a comic book terrorist is crying over an act of real life terrorism.
Right. Right. Like he should be thinking those guys are geniuses. they did the thing I never could, you know? And it's, yeah, it's like I think this is a bad comic any way you slice it. I just think it doesn't work as a story at all. It's up until now, there was no reason for it to have been told in such a choppy fashion. It's like a mystery that was, it was written as a mystery that was only a mystery because Tom King withheld literally all of the important information for 7 issues, right? There were no like pieces for you to put together. It was only a mystery because Tom King's like, well, I'm just literally not going to tell you huge chunks of stuff that happened in between stuff you've already seen, you know? it literally makes no sense in the way that it's constructed. So I think it's a bad issue any way you slice it. The idea, and I've said this from the beginning, I've been consistent. The idea of superhero PTSD or dealing with violence, terror, horror, and how that affects you is that's a valuable subject to explore, I think, with Cape Comics. But making that the spring event or whatever you want to call it, you know, making that your big tentpole event and taking a character and warping him into this unrecognizable person to get to that end in the context of DC Comics and the post-rebirth landscape, it really makes no sense to have done this. It just doesn't work.
There are so many bits of this that bother me. Like, one of the biggest problems I have with this is, and this isn't even just because Wally's one of my favorite characters, I'm really trying to leave my personal feelings out of this, but why would you make Wally the avatar of hope in Rebirth to just have this be his ultimate fate? It seems totally ridiculous. And I know that you can try and get Galaxy Brain on it and say, like, you know, it's exactly because of that it's so effective. Yeah. But it's not.
It's not.
It's not at all. It really just seems like this was something that Tom King wanted to do. And, you know, it's happening at the expense of the stories that were being told all across the DC universe. It just makes absolutely no sense to me. Like, even if you can somewhat excuse the emotional overload that leads to the accidental death of all of these heroes, the immediate aftermath of that, of Wally trying to basically frame a crime scene.
Yeah, what is that? What is that?
It ain't it, Chief.
Yeah, so then, okay, so should we move on a little bit?
Yeah, let's move on a little bit.
Okay, so Wally's out in that field. He's basically blown everybody to shit. And Booster and Harley are still inside. And are we to think that they're still inside because, as we've seen in prior issues, they were kind of delayed in getting out of their... They were delayed in getting out of their situations while the alarm was going off?
Yes, I believe they were, like, deeper in the simulation than others were.
Yeah, so... Okay, so at this point, Wally realizes that they're going to come out and see what happened, and so he borrows some of Booster's tech. And Zach, feel free to jump in here if there's. You said you had a question about this stuff, and he said, "Well, Booster's tech realized what he was doing and it tried to put his shield up, but I'm faster, of course. I'm the Flash, so I disabled the shield because." If you're fast, you can do that too. And using Booster's tech, he went 5 days into the future. So that's why when they found that body, when Blue Beetle and Booster found the body, it was 5 days older, they said.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He travels 5 days into the future and finds himself with Poison Ivy out in that field, which we saw couple issues ago, I think, and kills himself. Kills the 5 days.
Kills the older version of him.
The 5 days future version of himself. Brings the body back to the past. So right now, he's fucking around with time in a way that, like, he can literally bring a body back from the past.
His own body.
His own body.
I feel like that's an important thing to restate here, is that...
Yeah, yes.
Not only is it a body, it's his own body.
And this entire issue, he keeps reminding us that he can basically do anything because of how fast he is. literally every plot point involving him is because he's fast, right?
Yeah.
It's the only way he gets away with any of this. And he has time travel on his side. And instead of figuring out, and I know you can say this about any superhero story. Well, why, if Superman can reverse the Earth's rotation, why can't he just bring anyone back to life or fix any crime that happened or whatever? You know, I get that. I get it that it's pedantic to do that. But like, literally, if he's using time travel to set up the murder scene so it doesn't look like he did it, why would he not go back and figure out how to change things or fix things?
I mean, to me, there's a really easy way out of this. And I'm going to guess that this is how the series wraps up. My guess is that because he has shown us that he can kill a different version of himself, that he's going to ultimately go back in time and kill himself before he goes bomb and, you know, kills everybody else. And it's going to end with Wally dead again.
That's wretched.
But that's what's going to happen, isn't it?
I don't know.
I don't know. Why would that happen? And like, why?
Because somebody's going to convince him that's the only way.
Isn't the only way to leave that, to do what he did? But then instead of staying around the sanctuary, he just runs away to some remote Antarctic cave?
I don't think he can go back in time as that I guess he could go back in time, pick himself up and run there. But like, I'm going to say something that Zach's going to understand here, and Vince is not going to, unfortunately. This is not traveling into his consciousness, like in Lost.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, remember that whole thing, Zach, where there was the time travel, where they were time traveling into their, like, basically,
yes,
like,
I do. Yes.
2019 yeah. Brian could travel back into 2018 Brian's body, but with my consciousness. Like, that's not what's happening here. Wally has to physically travel back in time. And so he could travel back in time and then pick up his old self and run away, I guess.
Yeah.
This is just so fucking stupid.
So you're saying he's going to go back and kill himself, but then he'll still be around because...
No, he won't be.
No, he won't be because he'll disappear like the photo in
Back to the Future. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so stupid. But that's so dumb.
I don't see any other way this is going to happen.
It wouldn't, because this is a Tom King comic, it wouldn't surprise me if the next issue is just fallout and nothing resolves.
It just seems to me like this is so... I don't know.
Remember what Josh Williamson said to you?
What, that there was a plan for this?
No, that... Okay, never mind.
Okay, well, yeah.
Never mind.
Hold on. I'm literally writing down the time code here so I can edit this out.
Yeah.
Where are we? Brian, edit this out, please. 103.
You're going to forget.
I am. Okay. I don't know. I just... All right, so let's keep going here. Let's keep going. So Wally is undoing all of the stuff that he did. So, or not undoing. He is covering his tracks, rather.
And he's also altering the VR in some way to make it look like Harley and Booster are doing this.
Yes,
right?
Which is such a weird thing to do also.
He's doing it really fast, too.
He's doing it with his speed. He comes up with this puddler's mystery because...
The most contrived thing in the entire comic, maybe.
Yes. I think we've said that a couple times, but I agree. I agree. Like, what? He has to come up with some Yellow King style, like... murder mystery clue to leave behind, you know, like
he's basically the wet bandits here. he is leaving a very obvious, very stupid clue to people to solve this.
Yeah
without any of the charm of Marv or Harry, though.
Oh, just so stupid. So yeah, so he talks about how the Puddlers are these people who were removing the impurities from iron back in whenever the hell.
Back in the Iron Days.
Back in the Iron Days. And that, but that it would end up killing them because, you know, working around those vats, they would be breathing in shit that would make them sick and kill them. And that it was almost like what, you know, what was wrong with the iron went into them and corrupted them. And that's what, that's how Wally is seeing himself at this point. And that, you know, the Puddlers died, but the world that they built out of the iron or whatever was beautiful. And so, like, it was necessary in some way. And that probably supports your conclusion more than anything, Brian, that that next issue, Wally is going to think that, you know, the world will be better off without him. And that's the way to fix this, you know?
And I can almost see the contrived page now, where Wally is like staring down death and he sees Iris and the kid, Linda and the kids looking at him. And like, he says like, I'm coming home, and then blammo.
Which he's not. He's
right. Yeah, he's, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you understand yes. what I'm saying.
I totally get it.
I also think that it's really funny. I mean, it's not, it's, you know, this isn't the Joker thinking of crime, but it's the idea that Wally, to set this right, doesn't fix his problems, but instead just sends Lois Lane a note is a really fucking dumb thing also.
Well, that was going to be my, so this last page, we're basically on the last page now.
Yeah.
This is your big dramatic moment. This is like your penultimate issue, the closing moments. Oh my God, there's only one issue left. How are they going to wrap this up? How are they going to resolve it? And he's finally revealing like who he's talking to or what he's talking about. And he says, this, all this shit that I did, all this ridiculous stuff that I just told you about over the course of this issue, it gave me 5 days, 5 days from the moment I lost control, blah, 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 5 days, 5 days, 5 days for me to do something as good as what I'd done bad. 5 days, Miss Lane, for me to finally tell the truth. Not fix it.
Right.
Not like figure out a way so that this didn't happen. No, just confess. Which, I'm sorry, Wally, confessing that you killed all these people and then tried to cover it up is not as good as the bad thing you did.
No, it's not.
It's not even close. And it's Tom King plays it off as this extremely dramatic, like, almost not redemptive. I don't want to go that far, but like, oh, this is the moment where Wally starts to come around. Right.
Yeah.
And it's not, it's just a fart.
Well, I was going to say that, maybe he's saying telling the truth in exposing what Sanctuary was.
Okay, that doesn't really help either.
It doesn't, right? But like, maybe that's part of what, you know, what he's trying to get across here. Like, he's telling the truth, not just about what he did, but sort of what Sanctuary was, which again, to me, like, I really expected a part of this book to be exposing that the Trinity's plan for Sanctuary was flawed. And saying, like, here is why this was not an appropriate response to the PTSD, to the violence, all of that. But we haven't gotten any of that. So far, Sanctuary seems like it was sort of doing its job. Until Wally fucked it. Until Wally put together all the footage, and until Wally couldn't handle the Speed Force inside of him. It wasn't like Sanctuary was messing people up more so. Everybody we saw in the confessionals, not all of them claimed to be cured, but nobody was like, this is so much worse. This is dredging up all these old feelings. I'm not getting any better. We actually kind of saw people improving through this. So why is Sanctuary such a big deal then? Is it just that it's a secret? Because if that's the case, then Lois Lane should also report on every secret identity and every secret lair and warehouse. Like, if just the fact that it's secret is bad, then this is just the tip of the iceberg.
I think that's a really good point, Brian, and I think that the writer does not want you to think of that point. You know what I mean? They want you to read this story and go, "Oh yeah, he's gonna blow the lid off this whole thing." And
he's gonna put the whole system on trial.
Yeah, exactly. And he doesn't want you to notice that, like, no, the problem is that the Trinity acted completely stupid, and because Tom King made them act that way, and Wally fucked it all up, and nothing like bad or dark. Yeah, it's a total contrivance. You're right. That's a really great point.
Well, thank you, pal. But yeah, it's this issue. My God.
Like what? Lois's immediate next line would be like, "Oh, that's great, but you murdered 3 dozen people."
Yeah.
You know, like. Oh my God. I mean, otherwise, what is the thing? Okay. Brian, let's say you're not right.
Okay.
And Zach, get in on this.
I hope I'm not right, but I really hope that this ends with not redeemed Wally, like alive and redeemable Wally.
Well, really quick, before you say your thing, Vince, I just wanted, there was something when Brian gave his whole thing about what he thinks this is. I just thought that would make so much more sense if this was in the New 52 and this ended with Wally in a like rebirth pre-Flashpoint type thing with his family. But it just doesn't make sense in Rebirth. But you, what's your thing, Vince?
Well, what I was going to say is, let's pretend that Brian's not right about what happens in issue 9. And his is the very dark path that we would all have to walk together. So if he's not right, what is the only redemptive possibility that you can think of for the way that this, like, how would you write the 9th issue in a way that was redemptive to Wally or to, you know, or to the Titans? You know what I mean? Like, do they get to live? How does that work? What does that look like? What was the point of all of this? You know, what is the twist?
There's a chance that this is all still just the whole thing is a simulation.
Oh, that would be
this
bad
whole
too.
Thing has been Wally's simulation.
Look, if that is the case, like first of all, it can't be because
why?
Because we've seen like Roy's death in Green Arrow.
I mean that could be the simulation. I don't know.
I guess so. But what I was going to say though, is just to me that would be. I would feel like I wasted, you know, however many minutes of my life reading and discussing this book, way too many. But at least at the end of it, there would still be, I could still enjoy a Roy Harper story, or you could still have, you know, Kid Devil join the Teen Titans or whatever. And to me, that's a better fate than having this story mean something, right? Like, fuck this story. I don't care. I care more about the overall implications of this. So I don't really, unless it's like, if it's all simulation, is that a bad story? Yes, but it doesn't fuck the DC universe the way that literally any other outcome will.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to be one of those guys that's like, they brought back Wally just to ruin him, but like.
But they brought back Wally just to ruin him.
Yeah, I mean, even if somehow the Trinity and Wally or Blue Beetle and Booster, whoever, make this all right again, somehow. It still doesn't fix that Wally tried to cover it all up in a very stupid fashion. You can never undo that, right? You can't really undo that, like, he was probably one of the dumbest superheroes I've ever read over the course of this issue, right?
I mean, I don't care so much about the dumbness of it. I care more about the
sinister.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, the like what it says about him as a person. I hate using the term person for a fictional superhero, but you understand.
Well, as a character, then.
As a character, yeah. But you know, it's just it's absurd.
Yeah. What a waste. I know we bag on Tom King books all the time. This is so earned, though. You know?
Yeah.
It really is. We can't avoid it. We can't avoid talking about it. And I'm not going to lie about how I really feel. I'm just so baffled. Not only the storytelling choices that don't make any sense or are just dumb or sinister or poorly constructed, but like just the comic itself is not even like you're talking about the second to last issue of a 9-issue series. And that's when all this stuff is finally explained. And like I said earlier, the only reason we're learning it now is because Tom King decides that that's when we need to have learned it. The actual storytelling flow, right, is completely disjointed. It makes no sense. You know, it's literally it's April, and that's when DC needed you to learn the truth behind Sanctuary. It's not because it works in any sort of storytelling construction way. You know, this isn't Tarantino here where like the order of the chronology is like chopped and screwed for some sort of artistic purpose. You know, it's felt so sloppy to me and half-assed.
This is a tiny bit of a tangent here, but when I was a kid, my dad used to watch this show called The Ellery Queen Mysteries, and it was like an hour-long mystery series about this detective who was basically like a sort of modern-day Sherlock Holmes type character. And what I loved about the show was, at like, you know, if it was an hour long, at the 52-minute mark, he would turn to the camera and say, like, I've got it. I figured out how it happened. Did you figure it out? And he would kind of be like, you know, did you notice that? And he would walk you through how he solved the mystery. And as a kid, that really taught me, like, oh, a good mystery should be able to be solved. Like, if you're telling a mystery story, you should be able to look at the clues and come to the conclusion that the solver comes to. Even if you don't come to it at the same speed or whatever, like, it shouldn't be something that you can't possibly see coming. And this book was presented as a mystery, and I cannot imagine anybody being like, well, obviously Wally moves so fast, he reconstituted all the footage from Sanctuary and then also confused both Booster and Harley. I think the other one did it because he was moving so goddamn fast. Like, there's no way...
banging your head on the display case, please.
Yeah, you know, like there is no way that you could get to that the solution from this. So even on just like the most base level, like as a mystery story, this fails miserably.
Mm-hmm.
Miserably.
And you I mean, from the very beginning, this, there was almost no groundwork for Sanctuary as a concept to begin with either.
There was a little bit in Batman.
They mentioned the name of it. I guess they showed you a little bit of him working on Claire with that mask, but that wasn't even really, unless that was
which has not played a role at all in the series. Like right. Those the masks, which I that's what you know I mean I guess like checking your expectations, whatever. But this seemed like it was going to be. Have something to do with the things that were happening in Batman with like Psycho Pirate and all of that stuff that seemed to be where the story was going. And that kind of made sense, but
this is just, it's just another issue of Batman nightmares. It's just like
it's a 9 wow. issue series of that,
isn't it? It's like every issue may as well have been like this may as well be a standalone issue. No issue really feeds into the next as far as like any sense of chronology, any sense of flow, any real information that you can use in any way to get to the next. There's leaps in logic. There's things that you could probably only understand by reading Tom King tweets or something. You're right about the masks. Like, were the masks supposed to play a bigger role and something got scrapped or sidetracked? Or who knows? I guess it doesn't matter. Like, the puddlers are dead. The puddlers are all dead thing seems like a completely different. It seems like it was meant to have a completely different answer. You know what I mean?
It does seem like that, yeah.
When I saw Wally like writing that on the wall, I thought, no, this is. He did not just come up with that and decide and want to write it on the wall as some sort of red hair. Like, this is all wrong, and maybe it is. Maybe issue nine.
What if Psycho Pirate is like the focus of issue 9?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was just going to say, except I wasn't going to be that specific. But like, what if issue 9 you find out like this is all just somebody else's, you know, somebody else's something, or it's just
kid looking into a snow globe.
Yeah, exactly. It's somebody. It's Batman waking up from the nightmares. You know, it's. And again, I'll say like, well, that wasn't good, and that didn't, you know, that didn't make the series that I read any good or satisfying or anything like that. But like, it certainly would explain why this issue feels like it makes no fucking sense.
And again, it wouldn't do irreparable damage to the DC universe as a whole.
I guess that would be good.
I guess, yeah. I mean, I just, like, to me, one of the things that is unfortunate about modern day superhero comics is, and just any shared universe in general, but superheroes in specific, because with superheroes there is so much fudging of living and dead and like afterlife and all of that, right? All that stuff is fudged constantly. But one of the problems is that I feel like nobody feels like they can tell a definitive story that has stakes and that is interesting without killing somebody major in a way that will take longer than usual to be rewritten. Like, one of the beauties of Crisis on Infinite Earths is that when that was written, that was mind-blowing. To kill the Flash, to kill Supergirl, to basically wipe out the multiverse, like, that, there were such stakes in that, and those changes stuck for so long. I mean,
Did Supergirl die?
Yeah. There's that famous cover of Superman holding her.
Sorry, I was thinking Infinite Crisis. Sorry.
No, Crisis on Infinite Earths, yeah.
Because okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I that makes more sense. For some reason, I was thinking Infinite Crisis because also the Flash, quote-unquote, died,
right,
and Superboy died. And,
right,
and,
right.
Okay. Yeah.
But sorry. Like, but when that yes. happened, it was a unique idea. And it wasn't, it didn't feel like it was just killing somebody because that's what you do in these situations. And I feel like if the story was about superhero PTSD, there doesn't have to be superhero deaths as part of it. There's no reason for that. But we have this like brainwashed notion that if there's a big event, somebody has to die, and it can't just be one somebody. It has to be this tidal wave that washes out everything for a little while. And I'm just so tired of that. I'm just so tired of that.
It's like comical over at Marvel, like a prime. Like, original X-Man is dying, like, every other month.
Right.
And I was talking with a guy at work who was like, did you read the issue of X-Men where Cyclops comes back? And I'm like, wait, back like he died again and now he's back a second time? Or what, you know? I can't even keep track. And that's how it feels across the board. And I know Tim Seeley had like a famous tweet where he's like, anyone complaining about Heroes in Crisis doesn't realize that we need to kill superheroes to get anybody to pay attention. And I don't, is that really true? I mean, he would know better than I, but does that really move the needle? I guess just pissing people off moves the needle.
I mean, I guess. I don't know.
It is weird how that's like the only sense of any forward momentum is in killing a character and then eventually bringing them back. That's how the illusion of forward momentum is maintained, rather than actually letting characters grow and age and progress naturally. It's like they're zombies.
Next week, baby, deceased number one.
Oh man.
Anything else to say about this piece of shit?
Nah.
I have to say, I am legitimately intrigued to see what happens next time.
I am too, honestly, yeah.
I don't know what's going to be.
Maybe this is how it works. Like, this is why people buy this stuff.
Yeah, I ain't buying it.
I know you're not. But there are people who are. There are probably people who dislike it as much or more than we do, but still have to know what happens.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe they're pirating it. I don't know.
No, you're right. You're right, Zach. You are.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break. Let's all go rinse our mouths out. And we'll be back in just a minute.
Hello, everybody. My name is Mike.
And I'm Greg.
And together we are Robots from Tomorrow, a twice-weekly podcast appearing at MultiversityComics.com.
Each week, we take some time to check out books hitting shelves on Wednesday that are worth your attention. And each month, we dissect the previous catalog.
We also have long-form discussions about books we've enjoyed, like Dan Clow's Ghost World and Jack Kirby and Mike Royer's Commanding.
And if that's not enough, we also do creator interviews. Some of the talks you'll find in our archives feature Mike Mignola, Layla Del Duca, Sean Martinborough, Emma Beebe, and Greg Rucka.
So that's a lot of content for everybody. Please subscribe to Robots from Tomorrow in iTunes or Stitcher so you never miss a thing. Robots from Tomorrow has hours of comic-focused entertainment week in and week out. And now, back to your show.
And we are back. Before we get into our reviews, it's time for our lists. This week, The Good List has The Terrifics and Wonder Woman. Vince, you wanted to add a quick caveat to The Terrifics, right?
Well, I just think that... So Steven Segovia was on art this month, and it's probably one of the lesser artistic issues of the Terrifics we've had to date, but it's so Gene Liu and Yang that ultimately it's pretty good. It's a pretty good comic.
Can I throw in a quick caveat for Wonder Woman?
Sure.
I think we're not talking about it, but I think this is the best issue so far, and I think this run is really hitting its stride.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say that Vince Ostrowski is clearly the biggest Joe Bennett fan in the world. If he's saying that Steven Segovia's art was the least interesting on this book so far. So anyway, the OK List features Batgirl, The Flash, and Freedom Fighters. The Bad List is fully Gotham-centric this week, Detective Comics and Justice League Dark. Dark times for those two books right now. The New Age of Heroes list features The Silencer, The Vertical list, Goddess Mode, The Jurgens list, Batman Beyond, and The Sandman Universe list, Books of Magic. So those are your lists for this week. But now we're going to talk about Action Comics number 1010. This is... What part of this? It's part 4 of Leviathan Rising. Written by Brian Michael Bendis, illustrated by Steve Epting. I really am enjoying this crossover, this event, right? Event arc, whatever we're calling it. I'm really enjoying the lead up to Event Leviathan. What do you guys think of this so far?
Zach, I've talked too much.
I thought this issue was incredibly good. There's so many great lines. I don't want to like skip to the end, but I kind of have to because the last page has my favorite line where Clark says, "Lois, I just experienced an enormous clue."
I also love Tiger being like, Chaz was Superman the whole time.
That is also great.
Dr. Doolittle was Chief Wiggum the whole time. Exactly.
If I can walk with the animals. Oh, we're so on our bullshit. Yeah.
But then also the like checkmate flashback scene.
That was great.
Wonderful. Wonderful. The only good.
And it's just one page. It's just one page.
Yeah. And I love how Lois is like, yeah, that was a fun adventure we were on. So good. When that's like a new wrinkle for Bendis. Bendis can be playful. Bendis can does his thing with dialogue, you know. But I don't remember at Marvel him doing fun little interludes like that, you know? Am I wrong?
I mean, maybe I didn't read enough of him. I definitely didn't read even a fraction of everything he wrote, but I know I never got that impression from him.
No,
I get the impression that he's having more fun than he's ever had, and that's saying something, because I think he's had a lot of fun writing comics.
I wonder if this is the first time that he's been... Like, even when he was doing Avengers and all of that, he was still balancing a lot of other people's stories with those. Like, he couldn't go so buck wild with some of those characters because he still had to respect what was going on in those individual books or whatever. But because he is doing the two super books, maybe he just has a little bit more freedom with the sort of biggest character at DC. I don't know. But you're right, Vince. It seems like he's having so much fun doing this.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the best. Yeah, that one page flashback, incredibly fun. Everything about the Amanda Waller scene I liked, and I never like an Amanda Waller scene.
Yeah,
that was good. That brings me to a point I wanted to make about Epting's facial work in this issue and how good it is. Like the interplay between Jimmy and Waller plays so much on her facial expressions, but then even more so the scene what's the DEO agent's name? It's not
Director Bones. It's not,
is it just Mr. Bones? Okay. Wanting to call him Black Mask, but I knew that wasn't right. I know that's a different character with a skull face.
This is Mr. Bones. Push me to the edge. All my friends are dead.
Yeah. And Kate Spencer, not Kate Spencer. And that's that along that bottom page where he's like, I know you're not Kate Spencer. And she just kind of has the blank face and then him and then her with that smile, which was just chilling.
Yeah. This issue is great.
Yeah. I'm really loving Clark and Lois running around as these like they're like the Jennings from The Americans. This is literally like Americans disguises that they're wearing. It's great. I could not get over that checkmate page though. The nemesis of my nemesis is my nemesis.
Yes.
That's so good. And you get the little headshots of who would be in that issue if you got the full thing. And
yeah. That's really good. Was there a time when Kate Kane was the director of Spiral? I don't remember. I remember.
Think so.
I don't think so either, but...
But it's also been a really long time since Michael Holt and Amanda Waller, since Checkmate was a thing in general, but...
I mean, Count Vertigo...
Some kind of, like, whole alternate history that Bendis has...
Yeah, and that's one of those things that, again, like, it doesn't really matter at all. It's a gag, mm-hmm. but it's a gag that works so well in service of the story that's being told. It's just, it's great.
And it's mm-hmm. really good.
Also, I would love there to be, instead of a Times Past issue every few months... a Chaz and Andy issue every few months. Just like an Adventures of Lois and Clark's Spiral Spies.
Yes. I want a Chaz and Andy book. Uh-huh. And that reminded me of a tweet that Multiversity's own on and off Walter Richardson did today, where he said he brought up the old... what was it? Kongorilla and Starman.
Uh-huh.
Comic and
that we talked about last week.
Yeah, that they invented a logo, like they invented a logo just for that, and you've like never seen it again.
Yep.
I would love to see what the Chaz and Andy logo would look like.
Yeah. It would definitely, like, the C of Chaz would have a beard on it, you know.
Yep. Yep.
And then Andy, the A of Andy would have a blonde wig like draped over the A.
I love it. Yes. It'd be very like Mike Sikowski, 70s Wonder Woman.
Yes. Yes. It would be great. Keep doing what you're doing, Bendis. Please. Please. All right. Anything else to say about Action 1010?
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm.
All right. Let's talk about Dial H for Hero number 2. Written by Sam Humphries, illustrated by Joe Quinones.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to let Vince come all over this in a second, but I just want to say I was not a huge fan of the first issue, but this issue totally won me over. Loved this issue. Vince, go ahead. Jack off on the podcast.
Issue of the year, you guys. DC Comics issue of the year so far.
You're not even exaggerating or hyper like this. This is it, chief.
Well, this has Vince and Zach Nip all over it with the manga characters they become. I mean, come on.
Four not words. Even like specifically like
yes
what are the four words?
Four words. Jobu the Zonky King.
But
I lost it when I saw the Toriyama.
The detail is insane, right down to the coloring, like that red and black,
mm-hmm.
those tones, like that's insane.
Yes.
That
they got it so right.
It's perfect.
You all, like, I was reading it on my iPad. And I almost felt like I had like the papery Shonen Jump like in my hand. Like that sounds ridiculous to say, but like that transformation just worked so perfectly.
Yeah.
Man.
But then mashing up like two different kinds of like manga styles, which I mean the Iron Deadhead almost at first, I mean it's billed as a DC manga thing.
Yeah. Yep.
And then it starts off with color and then goes to black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the pages where they're together, it's in black and white, but Zonky King is still
has, like,
in
some
that.
Red.
What?
Isn't there still some red in Zonky King?
Yeah. It still has like the red and gray and black gradation going on. It's insanely good. This is the best thing Sam Humphries has ever done. It has to be.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the most of the credit should probably go to Joe Quinones.
It, yeah. But even, I mean, like, in terms of the dialogue.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. I don't want to take away anything from anyone here.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Quinones is such a chameleon and has always been. But it's amazing just how many different styles are in this comic.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then to just get the details so right. Like, anybody could do, like, a Dragon Ball homage, but down to the exact pose of Jobu jumping through the air and, like, flicking his bow staff, like, the pose is exactly right. The proportions are exactly right, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about it feels perfect to me. I was howling. I was hooting and howling, you guys. I was immediately sending you like my text that I sent you guys was like me freaking out in real time.
Yeah, and I had not read the issue yet, so I was like, all right, that's a Vince is having a stroke. That's cool.
Yeah, and I like didn't want to spoil anything for you, but at the same time, like, it's the only thing I wanted to talk about at that moment. I guess what I'm saying is this book rocks, you guys.
Yeah.
It whips hard.
It does. Like I said, I was not super high on the first issue. This issue totally won me over. So. Yeah. Do we think that subsequent issues are going to be as stylized as this one? Because the first one certainly wasn't.
No, but I will say the I forget the name of the hero, but the truck. The
monster truck guy, yeah.
Yeah.
That part was...
That was very... Who did we decide that was? Did we decide that was Kirby, or was that like 90s?
I think it was like 90s stuff, but I can't remember exactly who we decided it was.
Yeah. Like, it would not surprise me to see like a Ninja Turtles or something like that, you know?
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, the possibilities are endless. And I love that that's what this book is. If it's nothing but an excuse to do like love letters to great comic book styles.
Yeah. Well, I know that Naomi is being billed as a series of miniseries, like how Hellboy was, but I wonder if we're going to see Dial H or Wonder Twins pop up again in the future in subsequent volumes. Because Dial H seems like something that maybe would get tiresome after a while, but could work in these really nice short little spurts. Like a once a year, once every 18-month Dial H miniseries would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Oh, or even if they would do it as like a... Couldn't that be one of their anthologies?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
You know, like instead of doing like the Summer Beach Love Party.
And Space. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Do a Dial H, and it's like 8 or 10 different stories, different art styles, different characters. The dial kind of goes through the story, through the 10 different stories or whatever.
Now, though, you're making me like think, as far as the anthologies go, we have so many different imprints. I would love so much if DC, instead of doing these weird like season or holiday themed anthologies, if they would do like a Wonder Comics anthology or a Young Animal anthology.
Ooh, baby. Wildstorm anthology?
Wildstorm anthology, yeah.
Oh, that's Gabagoo, Zach.
I mean, why aren't they doing that?
Why aren't they doing that? Hire the DC3, damn it.
Yep.
We promise that Wally West won't be a murderer under our watchful eye.
The only thing if he does,
he won't cover it up.
Yeah.
How about that?
The only thing he'll murder is a sack of White Castles or something, you know.
Very quickly.
Yes. quicker than any man on earth could do so. All right, let's talk about The Wild Storm, number 22. Written, of course, by Warren Ellis and illustrated by John Davis Hunt. We're getting to the very end here of this book, and we're beginning to see the shapings of what is likely to come. They have not announced anything yet in terms of what is coming next for the Wildstorm books, but we've had our suspicions that it's going to be an Authority series. And Zach, as the authority on this podcast, how are you feeling about this sort of 2019 reconstitution of that team?
You know, it's kind of funny in that it really doesn't feel all that different than the kind of original quintessential Authority. Like there are a few small differences. It's tonally just slightly different, but really it kind of feels like just sliding into just, you know, a comfortable pair of pants, you know, that you haven't worn in a while. It's like, it's just good. It feels exactly right. And it's, I don't know. I am surprised by how not different it is in a good way.
I guess, look, I mean, let me just put all my cards on the table. I love this issue. I love this book. But if you're going to essentially create the Authority that feels not too dissimilar than the original Authority, then why not just tell new stories with those characters?
Well, that's a good point. There are a few like key differences here, and I think that like the main difference, and this is something that Ellis will get to build on a lot moving forward, is kind of the core dynamic between the four heroes who aren't Apollo and Midnighter. Mm-hmm. Like their dynamic is so far kind of the key difference here, and it's the part that makes it fun to me, I guess. Because I mean, I guess like the other key difference here is they've kind of combined two characters from the original Authority into one character, Shin, who is the new doctor. Like in the original Authority, there was a character named Shin that who was essentially like a hawk woman, hawk mm-hmm. girl. Mm. And then there was a character called the Doctor. And so they've kind of combined those and doing so streamlined the team a little bit. And that's a small change. No, I think it's fine. I think it's good. Because of the kind of team dynamic, or not even, and they're not even like a team, the kind of friendship that Ellis has crafted for them, which is still, you know, rather new and early on, but it's a key difference. But then otherwise, I mean, like Jack Hawksmoor feels like Jack Hawksmoor. You know, Ginny Sparks feels like a Ginny character. They all feel like themselves, and I think to make drastic changes to them would have been maybe the wrong thing to do, because the characters were so good and worked so well.
Vince, what do you think about all this?
Yeah, I mean, here I was going to say like, this was just another typically good issue of the Wildstorm, and I think Zach said it all. I think that's a really, really great point you make about it feeling like going home again, I guess, is, you know, and it does. I think it really does. I think the difference is the art style is a little different. You know, this sounds like I'm gonna like be shitting on that era, you know, but John Davis Hunt's art style is more universal, I think. I don't think you can pin it to any certain era, you know what I mean? nobody's going to look at it and say that this is 90s or this is 2000s or whatever, you know? So I think, Brian, if you're looking for like a different context, I think just the artistic direction of this whole world provides that. Sure. But yeah, I like everything that Zach said about that. And they weren't thoughts that I had myself, but when he said them, I thought I completely agree with what he's saying. So good show. The boy comes through.
Yes. Yes, the boy.
Zach's the boy.
Zach's, yeah, for those who aren't following along at home, Zach's the boy. This was a real treat. I wonder, you know, we had always been told there was a 4-book plan for the Wildstorm, and that one of the books was going to be shifting 2 years in, and this is clearly the book that was going to be shifting. And we've asked this question before in a different way. You know, we've asked if we'll ever see the sort of full lineup that was intended for this. My question is more, is this ever going to be an open-ended universe? Or will it always be a series of limited series?
Man, at this point, I almost kind of hope it is just limited series. I feel like this works really well, and I kind of think one of the issues with the original Wildstorm universe is that it did kind of suffer from bloat a little bit. Uh-huh. I mean, I wasn't reading everything currently then, but I got the impression that it just couldn't support all of the books that it had going.
Right.
And I feel like this really streamlined approach to a superhero universe is refreshing and works really well.
Vince, any thoughts on the ongoing versus limited?
I think I agree with Zach again. I think, but what I want to add is that I'm pretty sure, maybe I'll have to do some digging, but I'm pretty sure Warren Ellis said that his landscape idea for these quote unquote 4 books that we were going to see was all meant as a reintroduction of the Wildstorm properties.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time I took that to mean that those 4 books were the initial plan and not the totality of what they had planned for Wildstorm, and that it was essentially him recreating this universe and then sort of blowing it out of his hands off to whoever, you know, like a feather in the wind, to whoever would pick it up next, you know, saying this is where Wildstorm starts again.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to go back and look for that quote. Because I thought he said something to that effect, but I would hate to see, like a Wildcats book start up with an indefinite ending that just kind of goes on and on and gets bad and, you know, doesn't have the quality control behind it that this series and that Michael Cray clearly had.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd be happy with a series of limited series as long as it wasn't a series of like 6 limited series. I want the Wildstorm to continue for a while, but I'm fine with it continuing in a more fragmented way where it's only a book or two for 10 or 12 issues here or there, you know? I think it could be a lot of fun. Yeah. All right, well, it's time for everyone's favorite segment, which is looking ahead to next week. I have it open. Vince, do you have it open?
No, I don't.
Then I'll be the Vince for this week. Durr. I'm kidding.
wow.
just messing with you. go back to Simpsons. We're looking for more of a duh kind of idiot. I don't know if you remember Jesus. That. Just fucking with you, pal. Adventures of the Super Sons, Batman 70. The book that I know is on the top of your polls, both of you guys, Batman TMNT 3, number one. both Deceased, number one, DC-East, and DC's Year of the Villain come out next week. Deathstroke, which I believe might be the final part of the...
I think it is, yeah.
...agenda, right? Female Furies, number four, Green Lantern, number seven, Harley Quinn, 61, Justice League, 23, and Young Justice, number five.
This is a solid week. I'm excited about the new books just because they're new.
Yeah. I don't have any real hopes for Deceased, but it could be fun. Maybe. If our listeners wanted to get in touch with us, you can find 2/3 of us on Twitter. I am at Brian Needs a Nap.
I am at Wilker Fox.
I'm at Goodbye to a Shoe.
By the time you're hearing this, hopefully everyone in the Twin Cities area will not have to hear Vince screaming about the NFL draft any longer, because that will be over.
Chance, assholes.
Yeah, I put up with a lot. I don't know how much more draft talk I can take.
I love that everyone in my life is like, the NFL draft is like the biggest burden to them, because for like a month, it's all I talk about.
I like it. I enjoy it. I have no idea what any of it means, but it doesn't bother me one bit. I love that you like it.
That's why you're the boy. See, yeah. See, Zach, he talks about his Kingdom Hearts stuff all the time. And I'm only tangentially familiar with the first two Kingdom Hearts games. And I just love hearing his thoughts about it, even though I don't understand any of it. It's good. See, Brian, this is how you support your friends in their life.
I am so happy that you love something as much as you love the NFL draft. What I don't love is having to think about it. So
you don't have to think about it.
See, maybe that's the thing. I'm so disconnected from it. I just see it and I think, oh, that Vince, he's having a good time.
And I just think, like, wow, we're just lining up lambs to the slaughter here. It's just a CTE factory. And after being exploited by their colleges for 4 years, where their colleges made hundreds of millions of dollars off of these people who got nothing from it, now we're going to give them further brain damage and probably have them play for a team with a racist name.
I was just going to let Vince enjoy his problematic thing, but...
Oh, look. I like problematic stuff too, you know, but
Weezer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, everybody. I guess I'm just developing late. I never got over that sweet, sweet taste. No, I think he has the Irish curse.
What's that?
A tiny dick. You weren't aware of that, guys?
I didn't know that.
Yes.
I thought they had shillelaghs.
No. They have fingerling potatoes.